Can you believe in a finite object possessing infinite power? Or that a mineral can be proclaimed the medicine of the 21st century? Or that the power of nature can win over the ignorance of man? If you can, you will know why our mission is to get Shungite to the masses. You are entering the Shungite Zone. This is the Shungite Radio Show produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Welcome to the Shungite Show. It's being recorded on May 13th, 2025. And my name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Derek Condit and Mark Joseph and Catherine Taco, right?
Taken like bacon.
Right. Spelled T-A-K-O-N, right?
No, T-A-C-O-N.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I thought, you know, when you came on, you got a different name there. So it was like, oh. I know that you like to go by that one name. So welcome to the show, Catherine. And we've already started because, and I did put the recording on because Derek has, you know, I was going to do this and I kept forgetting to do it. And so I haven't done it. When I wrote Shungite Reality, my main mission was to get people to understand the magic of Shungite. However, my secondary and as important mission was to get them aware of the bees and the crash of the entire insect world. When I first started looking at the bees back in 2016, I didn't know a thing about beekeeping, nothing. And I said to the world, please send me a beekeeper. Well, my friend Derek here was listening to me, never mentioned anything to me, but bought the Shungite and started his first Shungite beehive that was in 2017. And somehow or another, somebody said, I heard somebody that's got a beekeeper, blah, blah, blah. And finally, I got the guy's name, and then I contacted him, and that changed everything again, another major change. Because Derek is, you know how they talk about multitasking. In Derek's case, it's uber-tasking. This guy does so much in a given day that I might take a week to do. And he just went into it, you know, full bore. And the first 2 years that he had the bees, we learned so much about bees. We learned how effective Shungite is, to mitigate the electromagnetic energy that was causing the collapse of the bees. By adding the Shungite, we discovered that not only did he never, in 2 years, he never lost a bee from anything that wasn't normal, wasn't natural, none. No mites, no sickness, no leaving the colony, none of that. And in the meantime, he started out with about 50,000 each, two hives. And within a short period, I mean, a few weeks, he was up to eight hives. And I said, well, how many bees are we talking about? He said, well, we got a million that we were able to recapture. He said, but another million went out into the environment. And he had moved into this new environment. And the neighbors said, you know, I don't want you to think that we always have all these flowers and all this fruiting trees. We don't know what's happened because it was something that none of the locals had seen, this incredible birth of life throughout the area. And my friend Derek didn't say a thing to him. He just said, oh, okay, thank you. He didn't tell him, well, that's me because I got bees. And the bees are going all over the place and shedding, sharing the pollen with everybody out there, and everybody's happy. And it was an astounding 2 years of dealing with the bees and what he learned. And he got involved in other things that kind of took his eye off of it, and now he's back into it because, yes, we have probably made a drastic change in certain environments with the propagation of the bees and, saving the bees, which in turn will help save other insects and everything, because the shungite just gets sprinkled around. But it's an awareness thing. People could kind of get their head around watching these bees have such an amazing experience of growth and health and everything else, whereas trying to explain to them that they can have that in their own house was something that was just too magical, too easy. But bees are so magical to begin with that it was an easy sell. So right now he's got well, there's actually three beehives out there, but he started with the two beehives. And we've been updating people on the conditioning of the beehives and where they are. And if you don't mind, Catherine, I'm going to have him just kind of go through an update of where we are with the shungite bees. Okay, Derek?
Yep,
Derek?
not a problem. I'm always, because I have to struggle to find that mute button on Zoom if it's behind something. No, that's a great idea, and that actually will catch everybody up. I was just literally behind the scenes emailing one of the sponsors, and I'll be emailing them all as well. But yeah, the shungite beehives are doing fantastic, and it's all just because, well, Nancy, are you going to upload this before I even begin as a video? So do I want to screen share an image and talk?
Yes. Well, yeah, it always goes up as a video, and I can cut it to whatever videos that you've got. Yes, put it up,
Okay, so here's what I'm going to encourage listeners now to listen or watch this episode on Rumble. That way you can see some of these photos. But I'm going to try to explain it as well as I can if you're listening to this, driving from A to B or something, and you just have audio. So let me get this image going here. And what we're going to do is talk about is that what I did was pulled out one of the Shanghai beehive. Well, we were doing an inspection. So now here on video, we have it. And this is a shot of, now I'm gonna have to kind of explain this because it's hard to really tell what's going on here on the upper portion. But this honeycomb is attached to what's called the inner lid of the beehive. This isn't typical, it can happen. And it's usually when there's too much, not too much, but a large enough gap between frames and or a feeder container that's in the beehive, which is our case, because our bees here started with no frames. So it wasn't a full nook. It was just a package of bees, 3 to 4 pounds of bees and a queen bee, that were literally put into a shungite beehive with nothing other than organic food to help them start. And that was just one time. And then this happened from that, which is a great thing, by the way. So what we're looking at here again for the listeners, is, and it's hard to tell, but it's two, I'm going to call them frames or, pieces of honeycomb or comb. Okay, let's just kind of go there because it has everything on it, from larva to capped drone cells I can see on this kind of in the middle there. But it is two pieces of honeycomb, kind of like visualize two pieces of toast in a toaster, although from this perspective, it looks like just a straight on shot. So that's what's going on. And then there are a couple of holes between it because bees are creative. They want to get around. There's never an exact way they do honeycomb every time, other than the structure of the cells. So in this case, they had enough room and they put, well, again, for just description, two pieces of toast in the one spot there, which worked out great in this case. So now they have four of these surfaces that are similar or darn near identical. And because I've turned it around and looked down, I'm in different views I'm not able to share here. And there's just, thousands of baby bees in there, and the larva state and the egg state, some capped. There's some honey on the other side, and then down the middle. So there are two other walls that kind of go right down those two pieces I was explaining of the honeycomb or the comb. And then on that, it's packed with bees as well. So again, for those that are looking at the image, those two black holes at about the 7 o'clock and maybe 1 o'clock position, if you're looking straight on, those are bees going inside and then kind of just wrapping right around the wall there and doing whatever's needed there. So you're seeing great growth. And Catherine and I were chatting a little bit before we started recording on the podcast, about, you know, she was asking, you know, how well are they doing? And I'll tell you, this all happened. Oh, geez. I would say, you know, I didn't get out there and time everything, but less than 2 weeks, they had this portion because this isn't all they have in that time frame. There were 6 to 7 frames already built up of, be it brood or honey, off to the left or right of this, what you're seeing here. Because really, I just went over to that beehive. Jalissa and I went out there. I took off the lid, sat it down. So think the roof. There's an inner lid, which is what you're seeing in this image here, that piece of wood. Again, it's not a very zoomed out shot, so it's a kind of a rough perspective. But lifted up the inner lid, I'm like, well, that's kind of heavy. And yeah, it was heavy. There's probably 10 pounds of comb on there. And then as you see, and you're seeing just a small portion of the bees that are actually hanging on there. So it was, you know, 8, 9, 10 pounds of stuff on there in bees, and it pulled it right out between the frames. And with my way of beekeeping, and I am about halfway through at best of a new treatment-free beekeeping book, where I'll explain why, in this case, I chose to not scrape off this comb, which would harm a lot of bees, the brood, because typically a beekeeper would often break or remove this comb, get an empty frame, stick it in there. So think like a window frame, but for those that, again, don't know what beehive frames are. So it's kind of like that. And then they get wire and wrap it around it to hold it in place and then stick it back in. And usually that'll work. Yeah, you've introduced all that wire and the bees don't like it for one thing. And then you've caused a lot of damage and repair. But there is a hole in the top of this inner lid where the bees can then continue up onto the. And by the way, Nancy, I didn't mention this yet to you when we were talking yesterday. I've added a second story. So, and by the way, I did it deep boxes. So there are shallow and deep boxes. And there's lots of names for everything I'm talking about, everyone. So I'm just going to default on, rather than again elaborate on everything. I put another deep brood box on top of the first one, which is where this one came from, because I like to give them extra room where they can expand their brood up into the next one. So when winter comes around, I leave the shungite beehives with two boxes, not just one. That way they have enough room for brood and or more than enough honey left over, so that's what they eat all year long. And then by spring next year, there's no feeding of any kind whatsoever because there's shungite honey in there. And you simply just don't touch those two boxes. So that's again part of the, you know, it's loosely called treatment-free organic beekeeping, but you know, the bees have been around a while, they know what they're doing. The less we get involved and mess with them, and I don't need to pull out, for example, this image I've been talking about, those honeycomb or combs. I keep saying honeycomb, but it's changeable because there's going to be brood on their larvae and honey. But I don't need to pull those out and to prove to myself that there's a queen bee in there and she's doing fine. It's pretty apparent. There's a bunch of babies in there. Queen bees lay up to 2,000 eggs a day, and that's every single day. So just imagine how many, you know, of these little cells there are in that beehive when there's 10 of those, you know, combs of beeswax in there.
So
So, go ahead.
just for clarification, this is actually in the second box now, the top box.
No, this is still the first one I just put on. That's why I was in there because I
Oh,
was.
so you have it. Okay, so this is why you were in there. You're putting the second one on, and
Yeah,
that's
taking off that lid.
around. So you removed the roofing, and could you just put the new floor in there, or did you have to take this? I mean, did this end up in the second floor, or is it in the first floor still?
Now, I left it in the first floor still because it is brood and you want them warm. So they've built other frames around this. So I didn't want to exactly take the nursery, let's call it, and move it up to the second story where there aren't a bunch of additional frames and bees already to keep them warm. So no, it's still the first floor, but I could do that. Well, then I've started moving the brood up and I mean, possibly if they start filling the frames, but again, I don't want to be dosed so disruptive that I broke this comb off of that inner lid. And there's what, again, you can't see it because it's in the very top middle, a hole, probably 3, 4 inches oval-ish shaped, that the bees have access to come and go. And they didn't seal that. So they're going to walk through that hole to get to the second story. And that's where they're going to start filling up those frames with honey. And they'll keep most of their brood, which is what this comb is mostly, is brood or babies, in the bottom floor. So the first box, which is why it's called a brood box. And they're deeper. So all the boxes above the second story are going to be honey boxes because it's hard to imagine, but they get really heavy, these honey boxes, especially when you're using a 10 frame Langstroth hive. So there's 10 different frames of honey with honey on each side, and that adds up to 40, 50 pounds of honey in just one box that you have to lift off of. I mean, and who knows how high at this rate. Well, I already have to go buy new boxes. What were May, whatever date you said, 13th? that's pretty phenomenal, I'll tell you, with these hives. Again, starting with no frames, because typically a Nook would have 5 frames of pre-made wax, brood babies already in, everything going. These bees had nothing, not one baby. Not even a chamber to put the baby in. So they had to go all of this, and they've done it, and more than I'm even showing you here, in just those few weeks' time. So that tells me, I better get some more stories, we'll call it, boxes to move up on with frames. So they're going to build high, and I'm going to let them go as high as they want. This is in a large horse barn. That's what the wood is. Again, for the if there's viewers, that's just kind of a wood wall. You can see behind the comb there. And we'll get video next time to share. And I'd like to encourage everybody to go to the Rumble version of this podcast, and so you can see any video or images we share. Catherine, Mark, or Nancy, do you guys have any questions on the images?
I'd like you to explain why it seems so clumpy. Remember that you've already told me what it is, but the clumpiness, how, why that some of the bees are all conjugated in one side and then the other side.
Oh, that just depends. Well, okay, where you don't see bees, what you do see are on the left there, open cells where there's nothing to feed in there. There's
Can
nothing
you
going
zoom
on.
in? Can you zoom in?
Zoom in. Let's zoom in on the bottom left, let's call it over there. So this is where, and when you look in, they're prepping all these little, little, their cells is what they are. So think baby baskets for an egg. So here soon, the queen's going to walk over there, and about every 3 or 4 seconds, she's gonna walk up to one, back into it, lay an egg, walk out, and then the bee's gonna follow her and give it a little bit of food. And she'll do that to 2,000. If you count these cells, and I don't want to waste 5, 10, 15, there's maybe 20 across there, and some wrapped around. I mean, I'm not gonna do the math here, but just think how many of those little chambers or cells, 2,000 a day she fills. And over here, I mean, you can see larvae in all different states through here, but let's zoom in over here. Little tiny guys, about the size of a grain of rice, to bigger ones that are fattening up in the cell. Once they get there, the bees again will change what they feed them, depending on what that needs to be, the type of bee. And then they'll close it off and then just leave it alone. And when they close it off with these big, puffy looking, and here's when they're closing off, they're in the middle of closing it. So you can see a larva inside, kind of shiny, and they're starting to seal off the outside and close that. That's a drone because they need more room in their cell or a crib. So think big guy in there, they need more room when they come out. They're larger. And then smaller ones, they'll be, I can look around for maybe flat one. I'll get better. I wasn't planning on showing all this, or I would have given you more examples. And the queen's somewhere in here. I haven't taken the time to spot her, and she could even be on the other side. But that's what's going on in here, and they're doing great, and the numbers are just crazy from my perspective as a beekeeper on how fast this comb is going on. And then more on your question, Nancy. So yeah, empty cells here on the left and bottom, and then the ones here they're feeding with larvae, and now over here there's probably some coming out, they're emerging, so they'll help them sometimes, and or they're feeding them. Now, if I zoom in, they're capping over here, So these are larger larvae I can see in these cells, the few I can see down into, which means they're in the middle of capping them. And they're going to just turn into other bees. And then after they break out, they'll reuse it. So all these cells get, they'll go in and clean them. There's a cleaner bee. There's lots of, other names for these roles the bees have. But yeah, so there's just doing a great job. And the bees are, and I don't get lost in the image here. So I'm going to try and keep talking for those that are just listening to this. But the Shanghai bees are doing great. I don't know how many generations in now because the new bees have already emerged. As many bees as we have in there, it's far beyond the amount, the 3 or 4 pounds we received. So the new generations are already going and they're doing fantastic. And they're bringing back, I don't see, and they wouldn't be right here, by the way, bees with pollen on their legs. Now, if I'd have moved over one frame, and I wasn't planning on all of this, I could have grabbed the frame to the left in any of these cases. Just because I know how they're situated in that box, and it was all honey. I just wasn't interested in looking at the honey, but if I did, you'd have had all these little bees that you're seeing here, darn near as many, with the same open cells, just like on the bottom left, but no larvae because they keep them separate from the honey, and they'd be filling. You'd see the little, and right now it's yellow and blue. So somewhere around us, we have blue flowers. So it looks like little, pollen sacs around their legs. They call them little baskets. And they're bright, not like somewhat blue, they're bright blue. So there's some really blue flowers somewhere. And then just really yellow ones, like you would think typical pollen. But they'll come back all different types. So as I, and I'll get an image, Nancy. So when I probably be tonight, because I need to do something else out there, I'll pull out a frame, take a photo of it. I'll see what flowers are out there now, and I'll show people that, well, here, look on the, and I don't know where it's going to be on the frame, but for example, it could be on the left. They filled this area from this flower, and you can see by looking at the comb that, because you can see through the caps to a degree and shine light on it, that the honey's more blue or more yellow or dark. And that's how you get the different hues of honey. You only extract the frames that were harvested or where the honey was made at that time frame. Then you can call it lavender honey or, whatever. Well, let's see if I zoom in on the top left, I see some orange. That so you know, it's hard to tell because this isn't, I mean, it is a high def shot, but again, we're zooming in on something so small. And if I was doing it for an actual inspection, I would have, taken a whole lot more photos really quickly at different angles. And again, we'll do that. So stay tuned for the next podcast on Shanghai Reality because we're going to get more into the bees all the time and we'll get more images too and then talk about them. Do you guys have any other questions on the image we're sharing here? I can remove
In that space, Derek, where would you be putting the shungite rocks at?
Well, on this hive, it of course the entire exterior of the hives are painted with shungite paint, and then there are three nuggets at the entrance. And then on this particular hive, there's actually a shungite Merkaba about 2 inches diameter, I guess you'd call it on that one, on the very top of the hive. Just because, and I left those because that's what I happened to have with me when I went and picked this hive up when there was no shungite. They were just in a plastic bee package, it's called. So a box with a bunch of holes in it, basically, but plastic. I mean, it's made for that. So in essence, that's what it was. But I'm like, well, no, I'm going to introduce shungite from the get-go. So I had that guy with me in my van and an oval palm stone one for the other beehive or package. And then just sat it on top while we were, driving back to our location. So I left them on there. So that's the only thing that's a little different that I've maybe mentioned before. And I haven't noted it's because they have shungite. So no matter what for listeners, if you can default, and the whole method is on our website, mysticalwars.com. There's a shungite beehives page. I colloidal silver sprayed the inside of these hives. All these boxes were treated with that beforehand and then let dry. So in essence, the small silver particles are just kind of stuck on the inside of all the walls of their house or beehive. And that, takes care of the mold and funguses. We're having no issues of that. And it's been really, it's raining today. Lots of wet weather. You can't keep your hives from getting wet for the most part, depending on where they're at. So they're going to get, no matter what, there's moisture in the air, so they're getting moist. And I'm bringing that up because we're not having any fungus mold issues like that. They're doing fine. So I'll keep monitoring, but so that's where how the shungite's introduced to these hives. And I don't know.
And to clarify, that's the one you have in your store, the Cosmic Silver Shungite paint, right?
Correct. Yep. And or we've now put packages together to where you can buy up to a pound of the Cosmic Silver Shungite powder and make your own paint at home for, yeah, do your beehives, but do your bedroom as well. Or maybe a wall in your bedroom, but I'd try and do all of them. So we've discounted that so people can really have the experience. And then you have your own shungite room at home, again, with the bees too. So, yep, that's a.
People have sent you testimonials about the use of the paint. Maybe that could be put in your on the product page if there's any worth putting up there.
Oh, there's a lot worth putting up there. Yeah, is usually my excuse. It's a time thing, but that I'm gonna jot a note down. So, because I get lots of testimonials, and it
Yeah,
just
and also like sorry, the next expanded version of your Shanghai book, those could be there too.
testimonials to book. I literally just jotted that down. Thank you. No, I didn't. I'm just, juggling so many things. Now I'm thinking, oh, we need to get into the ancient bee rites, as they call them, from way back when, and share with. Why people used them, I won't get all that now. So I'm juggling topics and chapters like that, and I'm not even thinking about testimonials, but there are a lot to share. A lot to share, especially with shungite bees. And then just shungite rooms. People have built them at their home now because they've walked into the shungite room here at Mystical Wares, and then had the experience, felt the energy shift, and go, oh my gosh, it's a thing. And then they get the powder, go home, do their own deal. And then I've had experiences where they were building houses out here. These are local individuals too, where they've added it to the foundation of their house. I mean, right now there's one for sure, and they're working on others, a local tribe that's going to be embedding it in all their new buildings. We just sent out a, I think, darn near full 5 gallon bucket of nuggets and powder. Justin's involved in that one. He's taking care of that. He's the sponsor behind it. He's doing it all. So. Yeah, there's individuals like that. Yeah, we'll look for feedback from them too.
You might want to explain your book.
The new one, yeah, I've got it, and it'll c come out quicker than probably even I expect. I tend to get them done fast, but and right now I'm even. Let me just go ahead and stop the screen share there, so I get back to where I need to figure out what I even titled the book because I keep changing everything. Believe it or not, that's what's also crazy. So it's a treatment-free beekeeping book, and there's lots of ways that, like I said, of describing that. But the title of the book is, of course, many things can change, but The Natural Beekeeper's Path: Treatment-Free Practices for a Living World. And that's the title, because I want to get the gist across that there are natural ways. And again, I won't jump in and read the book now, but I get into all sorts of ways you can still have an effect with bees, as they like the word treat, but do it in a natural way. For example, I mentioned colloidal silver to inhibit, bacteria, viruses, all types of other diseases. And then there's mushrooms you can get into. There's lots of research behind that. I'm far from the first person to work with mushrooms on bees. That's a thing. And you can help with issues like deformed wing virus. Darn near 100%. That's where bees are born with deformed wings. From other issues. So the symptom would be a deformed wing. Well, you can take care of those other issues. And again, I'm going quickly here because it's not about, getting all the specifics now, but you can take care of those other sicknesses and diseases, as they're called sometimes, with things like mushrooms or not introducing harmful things like inks and glues in your smoker material, for example. So a little, if again, for non-beekeepers, there's a little metal-looking device you may have seen on TV. It kind of puffs out a bunch of smoke, and that just, they say, calms the bees. What it really does is tricks them into thinking there's potentially a fire nearby, so they start kind of gorging on honey, and it doesn't do any harm. It distracts them, basically, is what it does. Well, when you're distracting them, you don't want the chemicals being burned, or again, the glues and toxins in the different binders in cardboard, let's say, or the inks in the newspaper, and that's typically a lot of the stuff, or chemicals sprayed on weeds that have dried on the side of the road. that's a thing we want, you want to avoid as well. So if you're going to use grasses, which is a great idea, or pine needles, I'm actually, I don't know, probably a dozen examples of other materials in the book of what beekeepers can do rather than those other things. And they even sell, oh, I forget what they call them. I think they call them, and they probably still do, Prestone logs. So think, you know, you can buy a Prestone log for your, and you should not do it. There's a lot of chemicals and all that stuff. But they do the same thing for beehives. They'll make little mini ones. I mean, they do the same thing for heating furnaces and houses in some areas, but those have binders, is what I'm getting at here. So even that's not a great idea. So, you know, watch things like that. And then when there are sicknesses, there's things you can do as well to help them. And that's all in the book. But usually when you do things right and you don't disturb the bees all the time, you let them do their thing. And again, you pre-treat with colloidal silvers and mushroom tinctures in there. If you, and there's a way to feed them with organic foods or sugars, again, organic only. You want to avoid metals and other things that could be in it. And then you add the like armadew mushroom. That's a type of mushroom that you can put the extract in the feed, the liquid, and that'll help the bees that way. That's one way to help boost their immune system. And then when they're healthy, they get rid of the mites, because mites is a thing. So think little pests that kind of like fleas on your cat or dog, but these can really, you know, inhibit a bee from flying, from doing its work. It limits its lifespan. There's lots of issues. The mites can get into the cells, affect the brood. So if you do things like put a screened bottom board under the beehive, so think inside the hive, the floor, well, it's screened, a bunch of holes in it. The bees can't fall through, but it's small enough for the mites to fall through. So as bees groom and clean themselves, and they do that, and the mites fall off, well, then the mites fall down below. And sometimes you layer it down there, and there's sticky ones you can put, non-toxic glues, and there's pastes. You know, I'm going to do some more research on the various types people are using now and provide that in the new book. But what I'm getting at is there are natural ways so that then you're removing a huge percentage of the mites in this example from a thing like a screened bottom board, and the bees don't have to then spend so much time and effort taking care of that. And then, you know, try and provide them with water so they don't have to fly to, like, and we have farm fields around us. It's not a guarantee, or even the houses that are peppered in anywhere, even in our area, that somebody's not spraying some nasty chemicals somewhere, some herbicides, you know, all kinds of things. Well, that runs off into the water. So there's like, and I forget what to call, but just there's little inlets of water that run along the farms right there. And well, that's the closest water. That's where the bees, birds, frogs, everybody's going there. Well, there's chemicals in that, and that's a thing. So then to avoid that, provide a bee slash bird bath or a watering hole in your yard, regardless of how big your yard is. And then the bees will go to that first, and they don't have to go, you know, as I mentioned before, up to 7 miles for a drink of water. Well, you're going to need another drink by the time you get back, even a bee. So, and then all that time and energy. So little things like that, again, providing water sources, especially with shungite in it. So there's, think a little island in there for, you know, visualize a bee bath, a little couple inches deep maybe. But throw some rocks in there, shungite. So when they get in there, they can land. Sometimes they're tired when they land, and you know, the bees will stumble, especially mason and carpenter.
You
That's what.
know,
Go ahead.
we were doing the working to get the shungite water turtle into pools because it will you don't won't have to use chlorine in them. And so one of the first ones that the turtle was added to, it's an energy device that is based on shungite. And what happened was that the pool got so lovely that bees started dive bombing into the pool. All of a sudden, they go out there and there's a bunch of dead bees because they're actually being attracted to the shungite. And, you know, it's not a shallow thing they can get into. They were just diving for it. And this friend of mine was a metaphysician, and she didn't realize at the time, but she put out this intention: no, don't do that, don't do that. And just as suddenly as it had started, it stopped. So if if you know, it just shows you the power to attract that shungite has. It's just don't put it in your pool if you don't want bees diving into it, unless you put the intention, no, this is not for, you know, this is too deep for you. Go over to the one over there and that's got the shungite and it's shallow. But again, they weren't offered another option. So just wanted to mention that.
Yep, no.
Catherine, do you want
Yeah, what
to
have you
say
been up to,
something?
Shungite?
Yeah, hi all. Yeah, God, so much interesting information there. Thank you. Yeah, Derek, I've nearly read your book, The Natural Beekeeper's Path, and I absolutely love it because this is the way I really believe we need to start looking at how we care and treat for our bees. And certainly in terms of looking at things to do with enterology and the energy and the metaphysical side of things, and also, you know, looking into our ancestors and our history. You mentioned that you sort of started to tuck into that and looked at things like bees being regarded as the messengers of God. And also the whole history of telling the bees the importance of talking to your bees. I think that is absolutely brilliant because I think we miss some aspects of that in our everyday life, and especially when it comes to beekeeping. And I've got a bit of an example of where we're at with our bees and what's been going on that might link directly in with what you're doing on your book, which you might find interesting.
Perfect.
So we have had bees for a year and a half, and I had four hives. And what I wanted to do was a shungite experiment. I work with shungite. I have little shungite workshops where people can make their own beautiful bracelets, and it's a really lovely magical moment. And then at those events, they find out about shungite. But what I decided to do, because I was really drawn to the bees and the whole bee project from you, and completely inspired by you, Derek. And so we had four hives put in, and we had various different levels of shungite in each of them. So we started off with a control which had nothing, then we had some with just shungite paint, then we had one with shungite paint and the stones, and then we had shungite paint powder and stones. And then the whole plan was to run this exercise to see how it impacted on the honey when the honey was produced. I wasn't the beekeeper because I don't have beekeeping skills. This was like a community project that I really wanted to get off the ground. So although they were the bees on my land, they didn't feel like my bees. So I look after all the other animals here. We've got ducks and geese and everybody. But the bees were being looked after and managed by an outside external company. And what I noticed over time is that energetically, there seemed to be, if it's the subtle energy of it, it seemed a little bit disjointed and distracted from me. So I would go and spend time with them, but because I wasn't actually caring for them and living as close to them and observing them and being in harmony and balance with them, it was a little bit disjointed. It felt a little bit odd. And I was paying the beekeepers to come in and look after the bees. So after a year and 6 months, that's when we got our first honey. So it was a year and a half before we got honey. I'm not sure if that's the normal. Is that normal? Waiting a year and a half for honey?
It depends when you start the hive, but not typically.
Okay, in October we started it, but then we're in the Mediterranean, so we're in Mallorca. Anyhow, it seemed like quite a long time. And then when we had the honey delivered, we were given 14 pots of honey. They were about, I don't know, 300 mil probably pots, which seemed like a very small amount. And along the way, the bees, we lost one colony, and they didn't seem, some of them didn't, the bees didn't seem to be growing particularly well. And I was like, this all is really odd, having got all the knowledge and experience of shungite and the benefits of shungite, and we had water with the shungite in it. I was like, what is going on here? And then about a month ago, I decided to give the bees back to the people that were managing the bees. Although it was incredibly sad to do so, I felt that something was awry, that something energetically is a bit of a mismatch. And I thought, A, I'm paying an awful lot of money every month. So I was paying per hive per month. And then I wasn't sure that they were on board with me with the Shungite project as much as I was. So much so, when the honey arrived, rather than me getting honey from hive one, which is the control, hive two, hive three, hive four, so that I could take it to our scientists to get tested and analyzed, they put all the honey together and made me mixed honey. So that year and a half of preparing to do a control, to do a scientific project, to actually try and see if we could see how the shungite was affecting the honey, became a bit of a disaster, and it didn't happen. So we got the most delicious honey. I have to say, the honey was and is divine. It's full of carob, which we have in abundance here, aloe and lavender. So the taste is, oh, very, very unusual, but purely delicious. And we're recommended to have it with sourdough on toast, then your olive oil. And of course, our olive oil here is second to none. Then you put the honey, and then you put sea salt. So very, very high quality salt. Anyhow, that's a bit of a digression. So, yeah, the bees went back to the beekeepers. And really, reading your book, I suddenly got the connection, and I get it now. I think it's to do with the subtle energy, and that I need to be the person who is the beekeeper. So I'm going to go and do a beekeeping course. And what I think may happen is that the beekeepers themselves that were managing ours were managing a lot of bees around the island, and they were very stressed. It was a business. They were running it as a business, so they were doing it to make money. They were obviously doing the inspections. They were very time pressured. The bees were super angry after being inspected, and they weren't on site to be able to see the everyday running of the bees. And I have a feeling that that actually might have impacted the wellness and the environment of the bees. And also, I believe that Majorca is such a clean island in so many ways. We don't have big industrial farming. We don't have big loads of pesticides. Yes, we have 5G, but not in all areas of the island. I live up in the mountains. It's incredibly pure here. And I wonder whether energetically the bees really didn't need the shungite. So we actually took some of the shungite away. And so it's been a real, like you say in your book, so important to be the observer. And because I'm very sensitive to subtle energies, I was just feeling something in my solar plexus, really, that was just not quite right. So I'm going to start all over again. I'm going to do it with a beehive. I'm going to do the colloidal silver. I'm going to do more research with the mushrooms, like you were saying. I love that. Having taken psilocybin mushrooms myself and been introduced to all the sacred geometry, I'm definitely going to incorporate that with like the spirals. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to create the most incredible environment and ecosystem ready for the bees to flourish. Then I'm going to do my beekeeping course. And then when I bring the bees in, they will come into my energy, my preparation, the beautiful environment that I've created for them. And then I want to see what the difference is.
Yeah, you made some great points there. And I was getting some, I don't know how much we want to get into it, some intuitive hits behind stuff as well as you were saying. So I agree with you on what you're talking about that as far as the outsiders. I'll just say they weren't focusing and paying as much attention as you had wanted or were giving them energy to do on the beehives.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you get where I'm going with that one. But that's great that you're doing that. I think you probably have a draft. So I think it's you three, maybe they have a draft copy of the new book. That's not even half the book.
Yeah.
Yeah,
That's
so.
okay. It's a good start because you
Yeah.
already get the crutch of what you're doing
Yeah,
for
exactly.
sure. Yeah.
So that's it. But I'll be expanding on it. And that's why I'm drawing down notes. So I'm like, well, shoot, I got to add this section and then the other six chapters. I haven't even. So that's. Yeah, there's a lot of things you can do. So I'm glad you're open to looking at those other aspects.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's other things that can affect beehives. But right now, I mean, I went out this morning as I was talking about taking photos. I didn't have a suit on. There are no suits involved. Was right in front of the beehives taking shots. I have some video I haven't shared yet. The bees are doing great. They're responding fantastic, especially with the shungite around them. So I think it is more, there's so many factors, like you're saying, that you.
So much to do with the energetics. I'm so convinced it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just it's like they become part of you, as we are all one, as we're all part of the same consciousness. You know, I think bees are kind of right at the top of the hierarchy of that. You know, that's funnily enough, why the Freemasons love bees and bee symbolism, because of the hierarchy. And I think if you actually put bees where they should be, which is right at the very top, we've got a lot to learn from them. And I love the bit where you say, I will walk with you, not rule over you. And this is where it really came in for me when we were working with the bees. We thought that the best thing for the bees is to do X and Y and Z. And what I've realized over time is that it's much nicer if you give them the options. So you've got water, shallow water with shungite, and then you've got shallow water without shungite. So it's up to them to find it if they so wish. And if they're so in tuned like we believe they are, they will make that decision for themselves. So I'm loving that, where I'm kind of learning. I think we learn a lot from bees. I think learning to get out of your ego state and back into that connective oneness state, I think that's where I'm enjoying at the moment.
Yeah, that's a good place to be too, because then we all realize, you know, again, the bees know what they're doing. So sometimes the less involved we are, the better, and just observe and watch.
There's one thing I really wanted to mention. You know, you were talking about you know, the bees in our ancestry in Greek times, etc. I didn't know if you knew this about there's a chapel in Scotland called the Roslyn Chapel, a very famous chapel. It's a Midlothian 15th century chapel, and it's renowned for its intricate stone carvings. And on this building is carved flowers on its pinnacles, where it served as an access point for bees. They had bees inside the chapel, and because they believed that they were sacred creatures, and they were not designed for the honey, but they were designed because they were sacred. And what happened is, in over time, that the bees were either stopped or moved on from the Roslyn Chapel. But obviously, some really keen environmentalists or passionate historians, they in 2023 they reintroduced bees. But what they've done is they've put four beehives in the grounds of the Roslyn Chapel, and trying to recreate the energy of what must have been going on at the time in the Roslyn Chapel, which is meant to be an incredibly sacred place.
That's interesting. No, I'd heard of the chapel, of course, because it's known for a lot of things, but no idea
Yeah.
about the bees and all of that. I'm going to research that some more. And
I'll
yeah,
send you some pictures of it. It's
do that.
really beautiful. It's so interesting. In fact, I'm going to go there on one of my next travels, is I'm actually going to go up there, because I think there's so much to connect with. And also, oh yeah, we haven't spoken since I went on my shungite road trip in the UK. But that'll be another one when I do the next road trip. We'll probably go to Scotland.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. No, I hadn't known. Maybe that'll the Roslyn Chapel, well, I'll do some research. Maybe that'll make it in there as well. Because I love sharing information like that. So I'm glad you shared it on the podcast so others can look it up and see that, yeah, bees, you know, they've been around a while.
Well, there's an old story about the Ark of the Covenant being buried there.
Yeah.
That's probably.
Lots to do with Mary Magdalene as well.
Yeah. It comes from Brown's book on this whole history of Jesus and Mary and what the truth was, and the, you know, what's the name of the thing?
Da Vinci Code.
The Da Vinci Code. That's a fascinating book, because he based it on a lot of history.
Yeah, that might be true. That might be the truth in plain sight.
Yes, and what happened was that myself and many others were into the story, but people wouldn't listen to it. because it's no, don't tell me Mary Magdalene was married to Jesus. Oh no, and they had children. Oh no, I can't possibly accept that. You know, the whole Christian, rejection of anything that doesn't fit the scripture. And so what happened was he took the story, which is a fascinating story, told everybody it was fiction. It was not. Yes, there's a fictional component to it, but the basic, basic pillars of the story itself was all confirmed by us guys many, many decades before. And he took it, and people, they could read it because, oh, this is fiction. They really weren't married. Okay, it's fiction. But what happens is that when they think about the book, they don't think about it being fiction. They think about it as being true. And I think it's opened up that one book. Opened up a very, very different window to Jesus and what the whole mission was about. But yeah, so see if you can find it when you're there, Catherine.
Oh, I will do. There'll always be a quest involved in doing that, you know. You get drawn to these places that you have to go to. So, yeah, Roslyn Chapel is definitely on the list.
But the fact that the bees are there is stunning to me.
I know.
What a, I mean,
It
if
just.
that's why I even mentioned it. I'm going like, well, there's something really magical about that place, or the bees being a, drawn to the concept of a the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, I don't
But
know. Put it back.
how clever that it's through a stone flower. There's a hole in the center of the flower, and that's the entrance point for the bees. It's so beautiful.
And
Like whoever.
we don't even know if those bees are coming from the same dimension as we're in. They may be coming from another dimension.
Well, everything you think you know, you don't. So that's true. So if you're happy to be open and objective, then the world will become a much more interesting place for you.
Well, we don't know because, the first people that were here, well, the bees were here before the first people.
Yeah, hence my thing that we should potentially learn from the bees,
Right,
not the other way around.
exactly. I'm kind of thinking that probably flowers weren't even around until the bees got here. The other thing is Derek said something that was I can't even get out of my head because it's so wow. Oh, okay. Explain to me and the audience and Catherine, Derek, what you said last week about the spirits that you see associated with the bees.
Oh yeah, and I see it. It's interesting. So I see more. Of course, we're all energy. So when I look at beehives, I get to see. I guess the best way to describe it is little pulses of light. So, and that's when I can tell the bees are going to be expanding. The colony is going to expand. More bees are going to come in. And if I pause for a minute and kind of zoom back, Nancy. And just for everybody, the listeners, for the better part of my life, I had no idea what was going on, what I was seeing, what was happening. I had to wrap my head around it. And then my, I'll just call it etheric vision, as I started accepting it and realizing it was a thing, my sight got stronger, turned on, more clear, crisp. It's like having a sense of smell, but never paying attention to it. Well, all of a sudden, if you pay enough attention, you can sense, or even your sense of hearing, you can hear the subtle differences in things, musicians, for example, or taste testers or whatever. You can, it's a sense, it can be honed. So I eventually couldn't ignore that sense in me, and my sight turned on more. So I, a tough way to put it, but visually, because it's not with my physical eyes. So, but my vision turned on, my etheric sight, my third eye, I guess is another way of putting it. So I get to see stuff. And when I started turning that vision, and now that I'm even thinking about it, it's when my ears start ringing like typical, I get to see more. And how I default on describing it, just because I'm kind of hyper analytical that way, I'm seeing, I guess, off the typical visual spectrum. Can't explain exactly how, but it's a thing, and I'm not the only one. So when I turn that psychic sight, we can call it, towards the beehives, they glitter initially is like, I mean, I don't have another way to describe them. They sparkle, they glitter. And then when I tune in more, so it's kind of like looking over there, all of a sudden, again, just for a description, let's call it sense of smell. I'll turn towards beehive, start to smell, and I'll focus a little more. And then that sense of smell or sense hones, and in this case, visual. And then I'll see not just sparkles, but there'll be direction, consciousness to them. It'll be little sparks flying around that are etheric bees, is just for me to say really quickly, that's what it is. And when you open the hive and look inside, you can see where the brood, the baby bees, are generally kind of accumulated throughout the frames in the middle so that they all kind of heat themselves, or a virtual sphere shape in there. Well, that's it looks just as, I never thought about that. It looks just the same as a chakra. So if I have somebody here in a session with me or online, and I'm doing the energy thing, and I'm perceiving their chakras, and so if I'm focusing on that energy aspect of them, it does different things. Well, that same way of movement, and again, until right now when I'm thinking about it, that's what it kind of similar looks like in there. So like there's an active chakra or energy center, vortex, there's lots of ways of saying it, within the beehive, in the brood sphere. So that's a thing. And then that's how I'll know if the bees are, so that chakra point in the beehive, that kind of works for the conversation, will be more active or not. And then I'll know if the colony's expanding or they're doing well. And I do the same thing with people. So when I do the medical intuitive thing or reading their energy field, as I'm kind of pointing here at my couch in my office, I'm like, well, I'm just, seeing how active or abundant the energy, or how cohesive it is another aspect of it, because there's lots of ways of seeing and or remember, I'm just an analogy, or smelling things. You can get more. It's not just one overall sense. I got such tough things to talk about. I'm stumbling through this. But yeah, that's what happens, Nancy. Do you have any questions on that? But little pulses of energy, light, going around the beehives. So little etheric bees, in essence, I'm guessing. I know that's what it is. So I'm just guessing. I don't, or the ones that have passed, but they're etheric bees. So I'll say, actually, well, let me see. Well, let's try and get a percentage here. I would say it's half or a third of the colony is etheric at any given time, if that makes any sense. So if I walk out to a beehive, pop open the lid, look down in there, or just look at the bees flying around, percentage-wise, loosely, there's probably another third, maybe a little more than that, of off the visual spectrum that I'm not seeing with my eyes that are still flying around there. So there's, yeah, they're on different, and how I would, and I've never explained this, never even thought about it. I would explain it, they're on a different density. And that same thing when I see entities. They're there, they're just on another channel. Like we're all focused on, say disco music down here, where I can see them just a little bit to the left on the station there on country channel. But they're still there, just like an FM radio in my office. I describe it sometimes. It's all here, just where your focus is. So the colony is the same thing. Part of them are, again, for our limited vocabulary to work with here in ways of describing energy, where we should have 100 different words at least for energy. I'd say they're etheric. They're waiting to come in because they look the same as when I do the mediumship things. So if I'm doing a session and somebody wants to chat with somebody that's maybe transitioned, they look, it's hazy, and then so, but not always. Sometimes it's like I'd say 5D, if that's even a thing. Crisp meaning, or 5K, clarity. It just varies, and I can't explain that why. But yeah, so they're on the same that level or channel. You might be muted, Nancy. I don't know if you guys have any questions on that. It's kind of, like I said, a rough thing to describe when you're talking about, spirit or this energy of bees or something like that flying around.
Well, yeah, I'm assuming that, but I think Catherine, can you understand what he's saying? Do you feel it? Have you seen it, or is it something you're now going to aspire to?
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I said, I think I'm just going to spend more time When I get my bees back, I will definitely be looking into that much more and spending more quality time. I think the lovely thing about bees as well is that when you are connecting with bees, you're beginning to slow down. And we were talking about that briefly before we came on, that how fast the pace of life has got, and just that art of just taking a moment. That's why more people are getting into meditation, into being more observant. So many people are becoming more clairvoyant, clairsensory, clairaudio, clair, everything. And that's happening as well on the visual, clairvisual. And people can see orbs, people can see sparkles, people can start to see, there's some kind of sort of blending or parting of the veil. And I think so many people are beginning to see that in their everyday. And I'm encouraged by it. And I think that's something that I'd like to do even more of, and see by giving a bit of more time to going within and being spending time in nature, maybe that too will come for me too. But oh, it's fascinating.
I do have a quick comment that, so I feel them before I even see them. So what I'm saying is nobody has to even worry about seeing them. So because sometimes I get clients say, well, I want to see everything like you. I'm like, well, no, not really. If you knew the big picture, not everything you want to see. So it's not that easy of a thing. But on bees, you don't have to see them, even the etheric ones, because they're there no matter what, just like our past loved ones. They're there, not some faraway thing. Yeah, we all know this. So just take that same understanding to bees and know that they're there. I've done it to
But
the point. Go ahead.
that's what I was saying about the feeling that I was getting. So the subtle energies of being with the bees and listening in, like, solar plexus to the bees' energy. It's like something's off. I just know that something was out of balance, and I was like, I need to be the person here to re-establish that balance and create that harmony. So I knew that things, were off, really. So you do know, you absolutely do know if you're paying any attention.
Yeah, and you can even benefit from bees. So think if you're going through some kind of sickness or whatnot, you can, and I've done this on myself, so think, we often disregard it, but the placebo effect, which is not fake, which means we're working with energies, your imagination and emotions, and that can cure and heal anything. So if you have an issue, I've literally imagined bees around my hand. So just literally imagination, no more than that. And then all like I did that when about 5 seconds just said that, and I can literally feel a slight buzz, and I'm not trying to focus or anything. But when you do these things, it does start to happen that fast when you get over the thing of, oh, it's real, it's not real. Well, I'll tell you, 90% of reality is metaphysical, invisible. And again, and I'm speaking to those who know all this, but I'm just trying to elaborate it again for the audience. But an example, imagine the bees around you, just that energy, think about it and decide you're getting healed, and that they'll help you with that kind of thing. They literally will.
Well, I absolutely believe that. I believe in what you think you can become, because when I had my daughter, I put on quite a lot of weight when I was pregnant, eating too many donuts, I think. Anyway, after she was born, I couldn't shift the weight. And it was about 4 years. I was thinking, this is ridiculous. So you know what I did? I just thought myself thin. I said, I am thin, I am healthy, I'm well. I'm thin, I'm healthy, I'm well. Within 6 months, I dropped it all and I was back to my pre-baby weight. I didn't do anything. I hadn't changed anything. I changed my thought processes.
Yep,
That's
exactly.
it.
And I think you'll have a great effect when you get involved with the bees, and yeah, that'll be. And then there's so many aspects though that be open to whatever, and you're gonna learn regardless.
And I think that's also related to pain. I think with pain, I think you can think your way out of pain too. I think you can you could do so many things that were just m more magical than we've ever been given credit for. And I'm beginning to understand that, and the power of thought, the power of intention, the power of your hands, your healing, every single thing about you is just a walking healing machine. I mean, I'm just about to do a hug workshop, because I realize the benefits of a hug, and I spend most of my time, I say that I'm the best hug giver, and I spend a lot of my time hugging people because people know that I like to give hugs, so they come to me for a hug. But the power of the healing process of just holding somebody and allowing them to just sink into your energy field and take a moment is more powerful than any paracetamol I know.
Oh, absolutely. And you're not kidding about the whole pain aspect either, because I don't know if you know, but I'm also a hypnotherapist. I could put you in a chair and remove the pain. Have you not feel this out of there? There's so many things you can do with that. And it's me speaking to you, which then is the energy aspect. So it's really you doing it. But I'm just saying, even from the hypnotherapist perspective, well, yeah, that's a thing. And it's been around for a long time. We can absolutely do that.
Well,
Having
they say, don't they? They say the issue's in the tissue, right?
yeah.
So when you get down onto that trauma level and you can, clear the trauma that's held within the cells, then again, you've got another level of healing. And hypnotherapy is really good for that.
Yep.
You know, that deep trauma work is hypnotherapy, I think, is an awesome way to resolve things.
Yep. And the more aware that people, so from somebody's perspective that knows loosely, you can say energy is a thing and it all matters. So of course that's all of us here. Well, then hypnotherapy has even more of an effect because you realize it's not convincing you or tricking you. It's no, it's just, affecting you energetically and subconsciously, just lots of levels, because we exist on lots of levels.
But isn't it about sort of talking to your subconscious? I mean, if you did it yourself actively, talk to your subconscious and put things at peace, as much as talking to the negative entity that spends most of its time trying to cause havoc in your everyday reality, you could do so much. I saw this thing recently, funnily enough, on Instagram, where this lady gives a name to the negativity that she experienced. So I think she called him Bob. And she said, "Look, Bob, I really can't handle you today. I've got enough going on my plate. I'm trying to jostle all of these balls in the air. And really, Bob, if you could just leave me alone for now, that would be really great." And by identifying some part of herself, she is able to manage her emotional state on a day-to-day basis. And I just think that simplicity of being able to communicate with yourself and recognize it, is half the battle.
Yep. No, it definitely is. And how I kind of spin that one in my office here, it's a container thing. So she's wrapped her head around it, set an intention that she decided was going to be an individual called Bob. And we can all work this scenario, 50 different ways in our head, and it all works the same way. So I love the idea that you just gave me the example about her, giving it, a Bob or somebody else and a name. I mean, and then, but what you're ultimately doing, when I then perceive somebody doing that and get to see it, they're taking those energies or frequencies and literally just putting them in, because remember, that's a metaphysical thing. So they're putting them in a metaphysical container, and then choosing to have it not affect them. So one thing I would suggest maybe is somebody maybe not own those things, like call it an aspect. Everybody do their own thing, but I would see this maybe spin it in my head as some outside thing of me causing this, and I'm still don't want it to have the effect. So the same results. But rather than owning it, if that makes sense. Because a lot of it, yeah, a lot of this is stuff I only have, I gotta come up with a better example, but I use the example of like a dog park where there's a bunch of dogs, they do stuff everywhere in there, and somebody steps in something. Well, don't own it, just see that it's something out there and that you don't want it to affect you anymore, rather than, bring it all the way tight, saying it's part of me or my dog or something like that. Because
Okay, so that's a bit like so the thought process that I often talk to people and say, if thoughts, negative and positive, float around in the atmosphere, then you just attracted one of the negative ones. So you just repel that and replace it with the positive. And in yoga, that's an actual a methodology or a philosophy is exactly that, being able to replace a negative thought with a positive one. And it's a bit like that, which is external to oneself. It's like it's out there, it's not within.
Yeah, and I'll jump sometimes in my head is songs on your playlist. So a playlist of songs. Oh, no, there's a song. Don't want it. Delete. See it. Not mine. Now I'm going to download my next favorite song or something like that. And again, us as entities can spin it, what I call head games in our head, however we want, because that's the ultimate intention behind it. So we can think, I got 12 jackets on. I need to take off the fifth jacket. It's too much. Great. That's going to have just as good of effect as me deleting my song.
Yeah, interesting.
Catherine,
Don't,
I really, go ahead, Derek. I'm sorry.
I was just going to pass it off.
Yeah, Catherine, I would really like to hear about your Shanghai trip because we didn't
Well,
do it with you. You were planning on it.
yeah, so we went to the UK for 6 weeks with a girlfriend of mine who's also as bonkers about Shanghai as I and my 11-year-old daughter. And we left here, went on the ferry, went through Spain, then got on the other ferry and went over to, because we live on the island of Mallorca. And then we got to the UK and we had no, honestly, we had every single time there was an issue, there was a miracle waiting for us. I mean, the car broke down within about, I don't know, 4 hours of us arriving in the UK, only to find that we'd broken down at a petrol station. Round the back was a mechanics, and his name was Chris, as in Christ. And he was absolutely charming, and he fixed our car for us, and off we went again. We went to Avebury, to the circles in Avebury. And we arrived at sunset and we had the whole place to ourselves and we went up Avery Avenue and I've never seen so many orbs and we placed our shungite. So everywhere we went, we were either just doing it in respect to shungite or we were spreading the shungite grid or we were having fun. Whatever we were doing, we were doing. Whether it was a calling, whether it was a quest, it felt like a quest. So all these places went to wherever you felt the draw to, we would place shungite. And we've got lots of video and photos and haven't done anything with that yet because that's all going to come under shungite grid when I get round to doing that. And then the next day, I mean, honestly, it was like adventure after adventure, but miracle after miracle. We eventually got to Avebury and it was truly energetically magic. I mean, it really, really was. We went into one of the barrows, really old times. And we went into a barrow, a long barrow and short barrows they have, and there's so much history. And in there's a vortex. And we had just done a dowsing course. And they said, look, there's a vortex here. You will see your dowsing rod spin and if you go into this area. Anyway, we went into this area. Sure enough, obviously, our dowsing rods were spinning. It was unbelievable. And then we had a guy come in and play his didgeridoo inside the barrow where we happened to be. There were so many synchronicities, and we went everywhere. We went to Glastonbury. We spent a week in Glastonbury going around different places. We went to festivals. We were sharing our knowledge of Shungite. We were chatting to people. It was such an adventure. And then we finished up back in France. And we were, where were we? Near Karnak, is it? I think. And that's where we had just been placing shungite down at a vineyard. And that night we went to sleep. And no joke, I don't know what your viewers believe in UFOs, but I have to tell you, I have never seen anything like it. I saw a thunderstorm that made no sense. So you could see the horizon, then a big strip of clear, and then a big thunderstorm rising above it. And in that clear bit, we could see from our hotel that we were in seven flashing triangular reddish things in the sky. And it felt, the energy that you felt is that they were looking at us and we were looking at them. There was a real awareness. And I was like, well, what is it? What can this be? And it was pouring with rain and it was so emotionally charged. You know, you could feel it in the atmosphere. And this is right towards the end of our trip. And we were like, is it a flare? Could it be a flare? Why are there seven of them? Why are they all there? And then they would flicker, and then literally within a blink, they were gone. Then again, maybe 5 minutes later, two would come back. And I videoed it. And I mean, I didn't know my views on UFOs or anything like that, to be honest, because I hadn't really sort of, I always was open to aliens and things, I guess. Hadn't ever met one. And then when I saw these UFOs, I was like, oh my goodness gracious me. It was something. So that was a bit of an adventure. And then we went up to a castle, which was the last holding point in France for the Cathars, and they were slaughtered there. And we went up, and it was the most rainiest day ever. And it was a good 45-minute hour hike up to the top. And it's so drenched that the rain was coming down the steps as we're trying to go up. And we got to the top, and it was our last point on the whole Shungite tour. And I built a cross out of stones and the Shungite in respect for the death of all the souls there. And somebody had laid down in a cross some red roses. It was so poignant, and it was as if that was done for us as a thank you to our quest. And I mean, we've really had been to loads of different places and had the most magical experiences and spoke to so many super interesting people. But yeah, talk about an adventure. It was a really big adventure, and we probably planted, I don't know, 7 kilos of shungite around the place, and we've got all the places dotted, so we can layer them up on the grid at some point.
Yeah, that'll take some time. That's awesome.
Oh, it really will. Yeah. I mean, as much inspired by your very first road trip, it was a bit like that for us. But we were finding sacred stones and going in the middle of a field. We'd be in the middle of Wiltshire somewhere, and they'd be like, oh, there's some Neolithic stones in there. We'd park on the side of the road. I mean, we were in with the cows up to cow pat up to our knees, lying on the stones, being completely smothered by the cows. I mean, we were everywhere. We went up to Glastonbury Tor. And lots of people joined us as well, and were curious as to what we were up to. So we definitely spread the word about Shungite. And I think for me, part of the raising of awareness is the joy of doing that. And it's so novel and interesting, that if you're planting a seed, you may as well plant such a positive seed as Shungite.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, what a great story. How long was the road trip, did you say?
6 weeks.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it was fun with my daughter as well. You can imagine she was being dragged from place to pillar and place. And so we just had to make sure that she had some activities for her to do in amongst us hunting for another rock or stone or, sacred place or sacred waters or wherever we were off to. We kind of had to sort of make sure that her needs were met as well. But yeah, we did it. And I'm so proud of us for doing it because it was a big load of planning to organize. We went to some festivals as well, and that was fun. We went to the Wilderness Festival. I don't know if you know Dr. Zach Bush. Have you heard of Dr. Zach Bush?
I'm not so sure.
He's an incredible doctor. But talking about the planet, and I believe he said he was going to go for presidency at one point, which would be rather lovely, a bit like Marianne Williamson if she ever got that far. But he's a real inspiration, and he was talking when we were there at this an event, and I think he was very much inspiring about if you're going to do whatever you're doing, do it now. Don't wait. Don't wait for anything. Now is the time. Now is the time for humanity. Now is the time to hear your callings. Now is the time to act. Now is the time to live back and connect with nature. And I think that's what so many people are doing now. I think we're really seeing a pullback to traditional ways and reclaiming our ancestral roots and maybe following the Amish way and coming out with other technologies. I really feel that there's a big shift going on at the moment, which is magic. And people are so open to Shungite, especially the children.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. Kids are usually more open-minded.
Well, I did a workshop. I had six little boys, they were age 11, for a birthday party. So my first ever birthday party that I do for they ended up being boys. And they were to make their own bracelet. And there's me putting out traditional boy colors like browns and blues and some blacks and things like that. Well, these kids blew it out the ballpark because they're completely different. They're coming from a different place altogether. They've been incarnated here to carry on some amazing work. But they were just really creative, really bright. They loved it. They were totally engaged. But when I started talking about the magic of shungite, and I was talking about crystals in general, I talked about snowflake obsidian, and they were like, "Oh, we know about obsidian." And I was like, "How do you know about obsidian?" They were like, "From Minecraft." And they were saying how, they can mine obsidian and it's a portal to other places. Whereas in the older days, they used to make mirrors from them. And the understanding was that you could see into the future through an obsidian mirror. And it was so fascinating to see how a bunch of boys could engage and just get it. There was no two qualms about it. They just understood it, all of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When it'll come innately when they're not, hindered beforehand. That's interesting about the whole obsidian being acknowledged in Minecraft.
Yeah. So in Minecraft, they use lots of different minerals and they dig for them and they have axes and they learn all about like iron ore, gold, all these kind of things from Minecraft. So yeah, okay, it's a modern app or whatever game that people play, but there is some element of magic in all of these things, in the development and how curious they were as a result of being exposed to it through a game. So I think sometimes we could be very negative about what is coming our way, like in terms of technology, games, AI. But sometimes we have to let that go and go, do you know what? I'm prepared to see this differently. I'm prepared to see, to let this evolve and see how it comes into being,
Yeah.
So
How
yeah,
did the, how
fascinating.
did how did those boys react to the Shungite?
Oh, totally like superhero stuff. As soon as they held it, they were like, "Oh, this is awesome." Oh yeah, and I'd say, "Well, what does it feel like?" And they're like, "Well, I feel strong," or "I feel, and I'm like going, "Oh my God, I love it." I wish I'd videoed them, just sort of size, because I told them all to close their eyes because we set our intentions before. It's because it was a birthday party. We lit a candle for the birthday boy and said something nice about him. Well, that's what I asked them to do. And then to focus on what we were planning ahead. And then I asked them to hold a shungite gratitude pebble, which we have like the little, pebbles that you have in their hands, and to describe what they thought from holding the shungite. And their replies were fascinating. It feels cold, it feels light, I feel strong, I feel grounded, I feel happy, all of that. It was all in there.
Mark, was there anything you wanted to ask or bring up with Catherine?
Oh no, thank you for those stories. Do you have any other energy work updates? I know you had recommended some people to us some time ago that some of your friends and contacts had some good results with
Oh
Shungite.
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. So there's two people I really highly recommend you speak to. Sally is a reflexologist and uses shungite in her reflexology, and also grows has a vegetable plot and uses shungite in her growing and has fantastic results. And another is Warren of Wheatgrass. He grows wheatgrass and he has had some fantastic works with energy, sound, shungite grids, shungite water, and also has the vegetable plot that he shares with Sally. And they're doing amazingly good stuff together on that. They're always really interesting. And me, I use my shungite in my massages. So I place shungite in the hands, like a gratitude pebble in the hands. And that is so calming. I think that, and they often heat up. I mean, they're often boiling hot. And I know they're helping me realign the energies of the body. And then occasionally, if somebody's got an issue with communication and they're talking about their throat chakra and they've got pain or they're frustrated, I tend to put a piece of shungite on their throat chakra. And some responses are pretty instant. And I had one lady within 20 seconds, she just burst into tears. And all of the inability to be able to communicate through her chakra all of a sudden opened, and she was able to, in fact, she sort of screamed out, like, oh, in just not having a voice. And I found that fascinating. I'd never used shungite in that way in such a deep healing. But I really think there's something about placing shungite on each of the chakras as you're working. I used to place crystals on people's chakras if I felt like it. But it's not really something I do as a standard practice. It's just every now and again, there's a calling that's like, oh, I think you better put some shungite on their throat chakra. I'm like, really? Okay, all right then. And then you get these huge results. So the thing is, it's so antidotal, isn't it? But I have so many of those and people's and testimonials that I really want to do a shungite book, and well, maybe in partnership with you guys, really, called something like Shungite Stories. Because Nancy, your book has them, and they're incredible to read those testimonials. And I think there's time for an update. We could do something there with and pull all the information from all over the world.
Yeah, definitely. Do you know about there's a UK store who Cassie Spray, she has a book called, what is Shungite Expect Miracles, and she takes off on what Nancy and Derek have done too. Been on the show a couple of times. She'd be another person to network with also.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's her name?
I can email you the her site, and
Oh, yeah, please do. That would be really magic.
that's
Be really
Orifin.
nice.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. There is another therapist. There is another guy that does work with shungite as well. And I've been fascinated with his massaging and treatments with shungite. So it's quite interesting to see how to incorporate in your practices, like speaking to Sally about reflexology and how much benefit there is from using it in, in therapies generally. It's great.
We'll definitely look into it more. Do you have any other energy work updates, discoveries, events coming up, store updates from your online store?
Okay, I've actually taken my store online down because I'm refocusing where my attention goes. And my attention is very much on the word of mouth and the one-to-one interaction. So I am doing a lot more talks about shungite. I think because I can bring it all alive, and it's a bit like, oh my God, this is just such an exciting story, really, and bring a lot of stories together. So it's a lot of storytelling, and it's just magic to spread the word out there in the population and in the community here on the island. So I'm doing more of that. I'm doing more of the shungite workshops. So it's in smaller amounts, and people, if they'll find me, then I will sell the shungite to them. But yeah, I think I just needed to narrow down where your focus is and what it is you're trying to do and how you're going to work in service. And I found all of the having to pay for the IT guys to support the website, and my overheads were just going crazy. And so I decided that really, with the amount of online sales I was making, it wasn't really worth it. And I do much better when I'm one-to-one. Like this Saturday, I've got an event. It's a music event. It's a spiritual music event. I have my stand there from 5 till 8, and I'll probably make as much as I do in a week in that, because the people who are going to it are aware already, and they're keen to get it. And the only person they can get it from on the island is me. So you kind of have a captured market. So I go to that, and then I just pack up real quick and go and enjoy the music. So I'm kind of moving into where it flows easiest. And because I live in such a beautiful, idyllic place high up in the mountains, people come here just to experience being up here. So if I do my workshops and my talks from here, then I don't have to go anywhere, which is brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Derek, I was taking notes on a couple of things here where in your B book, are you gonna add because you've been in touch with people around the world who've used the Shungite and bees together, maybe their testimonials and then differences between using Shungite powder or cosmic silver Shungite like the regular versus the silver shungite. like what the difference in reactions are, like the paint and then the rocks in the front, and then like estimate of the book release date.
Yeah, I will be adding a whole additional chapter that, again, you three are the only ones that even got that preview thing, right? Even duplicated paragraphs, because I was just cutting and pasting that thing together to get some info to you guys. But I will be adding a chapter in there on Shung. I've mentioned Shungite in there a couple of vague times, but because it wasn't an overall Shungite book, I'm going to wait and put all that. So, yes, it'll be in there, but it'll be in its own chapter where I will expand on that and get it in there. In essence, a lot of the first book on so Shungite Unveiled, but the B section only moved in and expanded on into the new treatment-free beekeeping book as well, so that it's all gotten there. So yeah, as like I said, that's just a small version of what's gonna be in there. That's why I like all the input on, the backstory, the interests of people into the ancient aspects of bees. And so yeah, that'll be. And then the last part was release date. Well, with me, I keep finding sections and things I want to add in there, and then getting feedback from individuals like you guys. So it's, well, in my time frame, it's a long time, but probably a couple weeks, not long. So it'll be relatively soon, and I'll self-publish again, so it saves time, and I'll have it on Amazon, but of course, it's available at mysticalwares.com, and we'll announce it. I'd say probably about 2 weeks or so.
And just for those people that might have missed this, most of the information you need to be able to put together a sh organic Shungite beehive is online already at Cosmic Reality, Cosmic Reality, Mystical Wares website, mysticalwares.com. And I think you only have to put in the search beehives. Is that what it is? I think it is.
Yeah.
And you'll come up with the link to the page that just is very informative. I mean, that alone
Yeah.
will get you started.
Yeah, the website's brilliant. So for anyone interested in how to do work with bees and how to incorporate the shungite, it's a definite go-to. And especially with all of your research and all of the papers and everything else, there's so much there to dive into.
Yeah, you can get lost on there for quite a while, I noticed. In a good way.
Yeah.
Well, Nancy,
So, yeah, we're kind of like around the time that we were talking about. Has anybody else got anything that they wanted to talk about?
no, I've covered everything for this one. I'll give another update in a week or so on the next podcast. But I'm just appreciative that Catherine joined us, and it was a fantastic conversation.
Yeah, it was much too long.
Thank you very much for having me. It's really interesting. It's so nice to have a little catch up as well. And yeah, when we next chat, it'll be interesting to see whether I'm the new proud owner of my own bees and have done my beekeeper's course and are joining you as a professional or personal beekeeper. So that'll be really exciting.
Oh, I did want to ask regarding the energy work stuff. I think last time you were here, you were talking about different kinds of measurements on like a quantum level with not just with Shungite, but just energy work in general. It was Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, I think we would. There's a scientist here who's an incredible chap called, oh, can't remember his name offhand. Stephen Greer, no, Stephen, I've forgotten his name. And so he was going to analyze the honey. So he's more than happy to analyze the honey that we've got, but obviously we don't know which one came from where. So energetically, he will do that. He said he's more than happy to do that. He said, just bring in a pot of honey and we'll do that. So hopefully we've done that by the time we next speak. That would be really interesting.
Yeah, let's have you back again. Whenever you want to come down, just email us. It'll be fun.
Okay, fabulous.
Oh, and then Derek, you have your free weekly, let me go back to it, scalar healing at mysticalwares.setmore.com. People can just put in their name, no limits. Every week is different. This week's immune boost.
Yeah, Catherine, you should look that up. It's really fascinating because you could probably, well, I know you can. What he does is he puts together a scalar wave and you sign up for it. So your name is on the intention list for people to have that scalar wave during a, I don't know, 8 hours, 12 hours, something like that. But you can add anything. You could add your beehives.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
Okay.
I'll
You
do
know,
that. That would be great.
great.
Yeah, you could even probably, well, I know this because he's working with somebody else. Well, the person who sponsored the two hives that he's got going there, he's putting a scaler away from where he's at, only on one of them. And you could probably same.
Yeah, that.
We'd have two different research projects on what happens if you give a scalar wave on a weekly basis to, shungite beehive. Feel really interesting.
I think that's the way to go in terms of, when we start doing this all over again, is actually to try very hard, like we were doing, to get some scientific studies just energetically. It's interesting. His name was Dr. Stefan Becker. I mean, he's very well known, and so he has a clinic here in Mallorca, and he does lots of energy work with people already, with like bioresonance and things like that. But he's the one who can analyze the honey, and so I'm going to take it to him. He's a fascinating man.
There's a lot of them out there, you have to find them. It's like,
Exactly.
yeah.
It's like a needle in a haystack, but once you've got them, then you can start doing some magic.
Well, yeah, and I think that the magic comes because we're brought together.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a weaving of people, never mind the shungite. It's the sh people that are associated with it get brought together, which is real magical. Anything else that either of you or all three of you or want to mention?
That's it for me.
No, I'm good to go. Appreciate it. And thank you again, Catherine.
Oh,
Yep.
bless you. Thank you very much. God bless. And until next time, be safe.
Be safe yourself and take care of the bees
Will
and
do.
the mountains. I'm
Thank
jealous.
you. Come visit.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
All right, you guys, you want to hang up or you have
Yep,
anything you
I'm gonna
want
have
to?
to run real quick, but no, it was a great time. Yeah, that was
Oh,
awesome.
thank you so much. It's so interesting, isn't it? We're just
Yeah.
moving and shaking in this area. It's really good.
Oh,
Yes,
yeah.
it is.
All right, I'm gonna kill the window then. You guys be safe.
Okay, thanks very much. So much love, everyone.
Have a great week. Yeah, great seeing everybody.
Thanks.
Take
See
care.
you, Mark.
Bye,
Yep, talk
Nancy.
soon.
Bye.
You have been listening to the Shungite Radio Show, produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Thank you for being here. Be safe.